welcome to the show, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group, TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson. How are you doing this morning, Mike?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing very well. And I kind of like scoff, like, oh, well, you know there are some tough nights, but, you know, they're professionals, they're young, there's a lot to play for, whether it's Tuesday or Thursday, whether it's Buffalo or Toronto, whether there's fans or no fans, you know, T guys should be able to play. But then I remind myself what it felt like to play in the NHL. And there absolutely were games you go, like, not, you know, you go back in the day and be like, oh, a Tuesday night against in Carolina, you're like, this sucks. Like, this is no juice flowing here. So you're right. You know, no fans, not a quality opponent. It's going to be on the guys to try to motivate themselves, find their own energy, because it won't just kind of come naturally. It's true. It's the reality of the situation for the next little bit.
All right. Before we get to tonight's game and interesting observers, Mike, last night at the Montreal-Minnesota game, Sens GM Pierre Dorion and player development VP Pierre McGuire as well. So you're going at it two different ways on a Monday night in Minnesota. What, if anything, now would, you know, this is just your spidey senses tingling, would be they be there more so to scout Montreal or Minnesota?
Well, I think logistically, like, you don't need to go there when Montreal's going to be at home for the next month, right? Like, do you need to see them play Minnesota that badly? Do you need to see it last night? Can't you just stick around here and drive an hour away and watch them anytime you want? And I would imagine you would know most of, like, Montreal players just because of the proximity better. So I just think logistically it feels like it's Minnesota. Minnesota will be a team that is probably going to be active at the deadline. You know, so maybe they're looking at players that they might be able to find near the bottom of the lineup that Minnesota might be able to part with to get, you know, an upgrade. Mm-hmm. As opposed to Minnesota, or like, if Montreal is selling a lot of pieces, you know, I've seen some online musings over Tyler Toffoli, and Tyler Toffoli would help. Absolutely. He would round out your top six for sure. He's a very good player. So there are players on Montreal that would interest Ottawa for sure that have term, not the unrestricted guys, but the term guys. But I just think, wouldn't it make more sense if you want to see Montreal, just wait a day and they'll be here?
Right, right. Unless the, and I can't think that this is the case, I'm just spitballing here, but if Montreal has said, Jeff Gorton has said, I want to get a deal done in the next 2 days. Best offer. You want to get a viewing of a guy like Toffoli. I don't think that's the case, but I'm just spitballing.
Does that happen, Timmer? Does that happen in front offices where, like, we got to make something happen, we're going to make it happen now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No. Absolutely. And the other thing, MJ, is that, you know, and again, it's so speculative, but Ottawa's track record on the pro scouting has not been very good, and a lot of deals are made based on reports, and to me this is a sense of urgency where you want to go see a play. And also, I don't know a couple things, guys, and somebody pointed out on Twitter, I don't know what the restrictions are for management to go to games in Montreal, but I would also say, from Pierre Dorion's standpoint, I don't think if his team is playing Thursday he wants to be in Montreal watching Montreal play. You know, it's a night off. So, like I said, it's just so much speculation, you know, and to that, but no, oh gosh, yeah, and I think Ottawa's at such a pivotal point, and you send two guys. You're going there for a sense of urgency. You're not going on a Monday night to Minnesota just to watch a game. You know what I mean? That points to, like I said, and also that they've got to get it right here. Like I said, there's been too many misses on the pro side.
Yeah. And I guess the question then becomes, if the UFA guys that Ottawa has, I mean, Nick Paul will probably garner some interest. Nick Holden might garner some interest, just bouncing around. And that's probably it. Right?
I think Sanford. But they're all picks.
Maybe.
They're all probably picks,
yeah,
right?
Right. You're talking third or fourth or fifth or seconds or maybe whatever. You're not getting a first even. So, but maybe if you're talking Tyler Toffoli with term, I don't know if that's a first round pick. It would be he was one of the leading goal scorers in the league last year. He's a good offensive player. He scores goals. What he does, he would round out your top six. If you're looking for a right winger to play with Formanton and Stützle, and then you could have Pinto and Brown as your third line. All of a sudden, you have some makings of something going on there. But, so maybe you need to see that. But Tyler Toffoli is a very known commodity, if that's the guy. I don't know. Maybe because I'm just around Montreal. They don't have players that are, like, if you're going to look at Josh Anders, you look at Tyler Toffoli, like, these guys have been around long enough. You probably have a pretty good book on them already, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do for sure. But as I say, MJ, it's just interesting to get close, and, you know, it's fun to go. And as far as Toffoli, I like him as well. Any concerns about the foot speed?
No, because he's never been fast.
Okay, okay.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's tailing off at his foot speed. He's just been kind of a pedestrian skater his whole career. Mm-hmm. But he has a, you know, kind of crafty knack to get to the right spot. He's good enough to predict the play and slide by guys, and he's got a great release. He's got a great contract as well. 2 more years at 4.25. Like, anything remotely close to 20 goals and 45 points, like, that is a good return on $4.25 million in today's NHL. So he's going to outperform his contract, I would imagine, especially if you play him with good offensive players. I'm not super concerned about that because he's never been a great skater.
In your in-person viewings of Toffoli this year, anything to explain? Last year he was pacing at 44 goals in a full season. Mm-hmm. This year pacing at 19. Obviously the team around him stinks. Anything else that you've seen to explain that?
He hasn't played Vancouver enough. Yeah. Like, I think he had 9 goals against Vancouver, including 5 in his first 3 games. So, I mean, it was, you know, he just lit up that team, maybe more than that. But he's somewhere in the middle. He's pacing at 19. He's probably a bit better than that. He's pacing at 44. He's not quite that good. He's going to be a mid-20 or so goal scorer, which is really good. I don't think there's much to read into a drop-off because last year was just one of those years. Shooting percentage was high. Opponents fit in nicely. Got off to a great start. It was a short year. All those things led to a career year. But even his regular year is still more than adequate.
Mm. I just look at, obviously played junior hockey here with the 67s. All the reports are, Mike, that at the time he signed with Montreal, that Ottawa had made an offer, and whether it's Montreal went with the fourth year that tipped it to Montreal's side or whether other factors were in play, I look at, for what you guys talked about, I think there's a fit there for sure on a second-line right wing for Ottawa. That's maybe the biggest hole they have, along with answering the goaltending question over the short term here. I just think for a lot of different reasons, it makes sense. Does the fact that he signed for 2 more years, like guys we see dealt at the deadline to contenders, traditionally don't have any term left. That's what makes them enticing, is that you get them for this year, but you don't have to pay them beyond this year, and you're willing to give up. Does the fact that he has 2 more years, and not at a huge salary, but does have 2 more years, does that maybe dissuade some teams from taking him on, or is the salary so attractive that that's not a factor?
It would be prohibitive for some teams because of cap considerations, for sure. But every team is looking for guys to outperform their contracts. And, you know, he's very likely to perform or outperform his contract. So I think most teams would try to find a way to make it work. Makes it a little bit harder. But I think for a team like Ottawa, who's not trying to win the Stanley Cup this year, they're not going to have that chance. Term is what makes him attractive. You don't want a guy just for the rest of this year. You want a guy who's going to be around for a couple of years and grow and improve. And when the team gets better, presumably next year, to challenge for a playoff spot if they get goaltending, you want him playing in that on that team. And, when you check too, and this is a reality for a lot of Canadian teams, no trade protection. The fact that he played here as well, he's obviously familiar with Ottawa, wouldn't mind it, but no trade protection, because I think some players are intimidated about playing in Canada, whether it's cold, whether it's media, whether it's whatever, taxes that they think are going to be too high. Some players would not want to get to Canada. He has no trade protection, so he is available to be traded here and would come here willingly and happily.
Yeah, and this is kind of the domino effect, guys, of Duclair walking, signing Dadonov, and when that was flipped out, there was the talk about filling the slot. How important is it, MJ, at this point, to know that he was interested in Ottawa, know that he wants to come to one of the worst teams in the NHL, where here's a guy that played in L.A., is on a good contract, has won a Stanley Cup. You know, that psychological effect of being traded right now is generally, for most guys' mindset, is, well, I'm going to go to a Stanley Cup contender.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's significant. It's significant. You want a guy who is going to embrace what is happening here. And there are good things happening here. It may not feel like it, didn't feel like it start the year, but there are some positive things starting to take hold in Ottawa. And you want a guy that would consider and welcome all that playing for Ottawa entails. Whether that's the weather, whether that's the city, whether that's where the rink is, whether all those things, like those are all the things that guys think about when they change teams. And you don't want a guy who's going to be pouting, looking to get out. You want a guy who's going to be here happily and look happy to stay and try to thrive here.
Or maybe we're just all adding 2 and 2 and getting 5, and this could be all just. But that's part of the fun of being a hockey fan, right?
It is, and I think the issue becomes, it would make sense for Ottawa's sake, but like if you're Montreal, for all the reasons we just talked about, you know, they're probably not excited to trade Tyler Toffoli. They're going to make some changes there, and they're going to trade out some salary, but I think there might be other guys on the list before Tyler that they would probably look to move if they're looking to clear out salaries, change some things up, because he's been a good player there.
Right. All right. I wanted to ask you, as a guy who played in the league for quite a while, Keith Yandle tied the Ironman streak last night. He's going to break it tonight, 965 games in a row. Can you wrap your, as a guy who played a long time in the league, can you wrap your head around someone playing that many games in a row? And what was your, do you know your personal streak? What was the most games you played in a row?
I don't know, because it wasn't very long. So, I mean, I think it's worth, like, it's an amazing, feat. The fact that he's, you know, he's got an NHL record, which is hard to do, tells you that he's good, that he's smart, that he's fortunate, and that he's a competitor. I think people see the way that Keith plays and thinking, you know, maybe the reason why he played so long is because he wasn't that physical. That's not the case. He's been a good player, maybe not this year so much, but generally speaking, his entire career, he's been quite a good player. And how many times over those 12, 13 years were you close because you were sick or because, you know, your groin hurt or your back hurt or you took a shot in the foot, it wasn't broken, but man, you could barely put in your skate. And yet he chose every single time to get it, mount up and play. And, you know, when it's only 200 games or 300 games or 400 games, it becomes a lot easier to say, you know what, maybe not tonight. And he never chose to do that. I think my longest one might have been to start my career. I think I played about 180 straight or something to start my career. And I think the first time I missed games was because I was suspended. So that ended that. And I never got close to it again. So it's an amazing, amazing feat. And also, if you know Keith Yandle, the person, he is as respected and beloved as a teammate. Like, everyone who comes across him really, really likes him. To the point, you remember, guys, last year, the streak was supposed to stop. He was going to be a healthy scratch the first game of last season. And it was his teammates who went to Joel Quenneville at the time and said, nope, we're not going to let you scratch him. He is playing. We're not ending it this way. We'll figure this out later. And they kind of rallied behind him. He scored a goal that game, of course, went on to play every game last year, and now has a record that he tied last night, breaks tonight. It's amazing. It's just way harder than it seems than just to show up at work every day.
It was amazing. Way harder. It was amazing that Ulf Samuelsson was also the coach that had him in New York, Arizona, and wanted to healthy scratch him, but he still has a streak going. How bad are things in Philadelphia right now, MJ?
Got to be awful, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Edmonton gets all our attention, where Philadelphia, if this was a Canadian market, would be right there, would they not?
Absolutely they would be. The difference between Philly and Edmonton is they don't have McDavid and Drysdale. They have a team that they probably thought and built to be just as good or better than Edmonton planned on being this year. For sure, they are on the same level. And they've had, what, 2 10-game winless streaks this season? That seems impossible to do. We're only 40 games in. How does that happen? It has all come off the rails for the Flyers. And it's not like they didn't try to take some big swings, right? Like, they brought in Ryan Ellis, they brought in Ristolainen, they traded Voracek for Atkinson. Like, they made some significant moves. They brought in Martin Jones, who's actually been okay for them this year. And just, it has not worked out. I think Ryan Ellis missing so much time, he's played only 4 games, has left another hole that they have not been able to fill. But I don't know where they go. They're a bit like Montreal. They got some guys with some contracts. Claude Giroux is obviously the guy getting all the noise because he's the captain and he's actually having a really good year. He plays hard. He can fit in on any team, center, wing, whatever. But yeah, like, Chuck Fletcher has got to be thinking, okay, I kind of swung for the fences last year. Where do I go from here to try to get this thing back on track? And Philly is not a city or organization that will tolerate this. Like, changes get made there quickly when this kind of thing happens. Patience is not the strong suit for that organization or those fans.
To follow on our Tyler Toffoli and Ottawa discussion, there's a lot of fans here, Mike, that have also sort of circled and targeted Claude Giroux as a pending free agent in the summer. Given where Ottawa's at in its competitive cycle and where Claude Giroux is at, as you said, he's having production-wise, a pretty decent year. He's 34, but probably still in a place if he wants to where he can get term and pretty good dollars. Should Ottawa pursue something like that, or is he maybe a little too long in the tooth for where Ottawa's at to consider that, in your opinion?
Oh, you're going to give a 35-year-old 3 or 4 years at $7 million. I don't know. I mean, who doesn't love Claude Giroux? He's been an amazing player. One of the underrated great players of this generation. But I would think the one thing he has not done is win a Stanley Cup. And while Ottawa is trending in the right direction, are they a year or two away? A lot is going to have to go right. So I wonder if he doesn't take, you know, a smaller salary and try to find a winning team and just pick a spot that has a good chance to win a cup. I know, you know, he played junior here in Gatineau, if I'm not mistaken, or Hull. And so he's familiar with it and everything else. If it's a short-term deal, if I can get it for 2 years, I would do it. If it takes more than 2 years, I guess I'm saying I would be leery at that age.
Yeah, this is home for him, but hey, that doesn't mean anything, MJ. Thoughts on beyond this year? Who would you take for two more seasons, Giroux or Toffoli?
Oh, that's a good question. on Ottawa, for what Ottawa needs?
Yeah.
Because I think I'm playing Claude Giroux more than $4 million. I'd take Tyler Toffoli.
Toffoli will be 5.1 next year, and then, as you said, 3.5, right? So
I don't worry about it. Simmer, you know how I run my business. I don't worry about cash. I just worry about assets, all right? It's all the same to me. I got so much money coming out of my pocket.
You've got pay guys up front. You've got that interior designer on retainer.
We need new. I got a good interior designer for him.
Yeah, we need new throw pillows, though. We've been telling you that for years now. Come on. Okay, interesting development in Vancouver yesterday where they hired former agent Emily Castonguay as their assistant general manager. She'll be tasked to in part deal with cap management and contract negotiations. She is yet another woman that has been added to an NHL management and front office spot. We've seen scouts added. We've seen some people in analytics lately as well. Mm-hmm. Just kind of an overall thought on women continuing to kind of shatter the so-called glass ceiling as far as the National Hockey League is concerned.
I guess it is positive, undeniably, and it is groundbreaking. It feels like it shouldn't be, but it is. That makes sense. Like there's no reason why women wouldn't already have those jobs and be involved maybe more in management, but they have not been, and so for that reason, it is noteworthy. Men do not have a monopoly on knowledge, law degrees, brains, negotiations, understanding of hockey, how to build a team. You don't have to be a man to know how to do that well. So I guess what I like about this kind of new generation, next generation of women that are going to be, you know, flooding into hockey front offices is that they're not shy about their aspirations. I heard Emily talk about yesterday saying, you know, she's starting at assistant GM, but she's always had big aspirations and she'll see where she goes from here. Like, she's not just happy to be there. She has even bigger ambitions, which she should. I know Rachel Dory, who was hired in the analytics department. I think she was 22, working for the Sudbury Wolves when she's like, I want to be a GM someday. And now, whatever it is, four years later, she's going to be working in the analytics department in Vancouver. It is noteworthy because it is, but it shouldn't be, and I'm glad we're heading in a direction where it probably won't be. But I love the confidence and the ambition of anyone who slides in a role like that. And it's like, yeah, I'm here to do a good job, and I know I can, and I plan on doing a bigger job in the future.
MJ, we had Donnie Granato on. One of the things I asked Donnie, hey, being at Wisconsin, you went to Bowling Green, and I'm not sure if I presented it properly, but I think in the NCAA sports, the integration in athletics, whether it be trainers or coaches, do you not think the NCAA has been way ahead of the curve in giving women opportunities where, I at least that's my perception from the outside, is that they're way ahead of the pro game?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Whether it's, you know, as far as the management stuff in college, you don't see what the athletic director or the assistant athletic director, you don't interact with them that often. But certainly there is lots of women very high up in those roles. But like trainers, like I had female trainers, like athletic therapists in college, just like almost 30 years ago. And we just saw in LA last week, a woman was called up and was one of the first to ever do it in the NHL. So, yes, in that sense, you're right. The men and women's programs in university are all kind of blended together in their management, in their training, in their equipment, in their time in the gym. All of it is just kind of one lumped in together. And so maybe you don't think that there should be any separation because there shouldn't be. And Emily was, you know, a good player at Niagara, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, she's well accomplished, multiple degrees, all the things that you would want any candidate to have. And she's also another person you have to appreciate. Like, she's leaving a lucrative business to probably take a pay cut to go do something else. So she wants to do it. She wants it to work. And I would expect to do well.
What would be a pure guess on your part in terms of timelines for either, let's say, a woman to ascend to a general manager's position in the NHL, or, because I know that you're very analytically driven as well, and we see a lot of front offices now with a lot of analytics people who don't necessarily have maybe any background at all in hockey, but certainly from an analytics, do you think the time is coming and coming very quickly where we're going to see either a woman or a very a math nerd, for lack of a better term, running an NHL team as general manager?
I would say the time is nigh. Yeah, like I think that, I think within what, 3 years, I guess? I don't know. I'm just putting a time frame on it. Like, yeah. Women are being interviewed for GM jobs. The more that other teams hire, perhaps any reservations that to be the first, if it doesn't go well, how did that look? Women become just a candidate. And if you're just going to pick from the best candidates, at some point someone's going to think a woman is the best candidate, or an analytically driven person, man or woman, is the best candidate. I think within 3 years, we've seen the role of the analytics departments grow in a lot of teams. A lot of successful teams have strong candidates there that will be getting these conversations, assistant GMs, general managers, especially if it's going to be a president general manager situation like they have in Vancouver, like they have in Montreal, where the president or whatever the VP, whatever the title of Gordon is in Rutherford, whether it's someone almost above the general manager, then yeah, I would say within 3 years, and that's probably 3 years too late, but it's coming, and why it's not a problem at all. It's a good thing.
Okay, so Dave Poulin parked himself in Ottawa doing a bunch of games last week, and on an off day, did the canal the entire length.
Yeah,
21 minutes from 7.8 kilometers. This is on the back half, coming home from Dow's Lake back to downtown. A, did Mike Johnson bring his skates? And B, are you up to the challenge on an off day tomorrow with a wind chill of minus 37? That's predicted.
So, yeah, no, obviously not.
Okay.
Obviously not.
Okay, so, there's the short answer.
Unless, because I am stupid competitive that way, if it was windy and it was a strict tailwind, I would have someone drive me to the starting point and take the tailwind home just to beat Cooley, but I did not bring my skates. I only heard about this, actually. Once I was on the plane, somebody was telling me about it, and I'm like, of course I'm trying to do the math. Like, could I do that? I mean, I think I could do that. For sure I could do that. And having no idea if I actually could. Pooley is in good shape. He's a good skater.
Yeah.
He's nice and smooth. He's a big guy, big frame, powering through those ruts, not the smoothest ice. I was very much a glider, a very good glider, but I was a glider when I played, so it would be a challenge, but I would say that I should be the favorite. Just not tomorrow. There's no chance. But next time I'm back, if it's frozen, I will attempt to do it just so I can have it over Pooley all summer.
Yeah, Pooley said he elbowed a couple of people on the way to get out of the way. So his sharp elbows as well as all the other attributes you talked about. So good stuff. All right, looking forward to hearing you tonight on the TV broadcast. Really appreciate the time this morning, and we'll chat again with you on Thursday.
All right, guys. Have a great day.